It's Thursday. It's October 1st, which is why I'm wearing long trousers. That's right. I had to accept, Jules. The summer is over.
I know.
It's the Gab and Jules Show. The transfer window's winding to an end. We got a lot to get into. We'll be talking to Mark Ogden later about Manchester United. What's up with their transfer window or not? We'll have quick hits, of course, but let's get right into it at the top because it was the German Super Cup last night, Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Bayern Munich won 3-2. Jules, I was not impressed. I thought Borussia Dortmund threw that game away, and those warning bells, they're still going off, the ones we flagged up.
You're right, and had Manuel Neuer not made an incredible save on a one-on-one situation
against Erling Haaland.
Okay, this is my theory on it. So Erling Haaland, for the people who haven't seen, he scores the second goal. He's put through by a great transition play by Dortmund, recovering the ball really high. Anyway, he's one-on-one with Neuer and hits the ball on Neuer's right-hand side, right? A few minutes later, there's that other chance, and Haaland puts the ball exactly on the same side of Neuer. And I really wonder if Neuer sort of knew that the ball was coming again on that same side and he was ready for it, and if maybe Haaland should have picked another option. And just, anyway, that
why are you going
huge
nitpick about the future of football?
No, I'm just saying to you, this is a huge save, and I think if Haaland scores that, Dortmund wins it. But you're right. It was an unbalanced performance, an unbalanced team by Bayern Munich. It was
Javi Martinez is not supposed to be here.
No.
Right? He's supposed to be gone.
Exactly.
And when you Flick have is forced to play him because Goretzka's out, because they just don't have enough players.
Yes, you're right. And when you have a Martinez-Tolisso midfield, it obviously doesn't give you the same security that if you had Kimmich, you know, deep there, or even Goretzka next to him, and I think, and Thiago, of course, as well. And I think this is an issue that they have to sort out.
And I don't like Müller on the wing anymore. I mean, they're devastating through the middle, but you know, we said these are issues that right back, attacking right back, center midfield, and I think another center forward or another sort of attacking midfield, winger, occasional second striker option. I think that should be the shopping list between now and the end of the window. But it's not going to happen. And I want to talk about Borussia Dortmund because we have different views on Lucien Favre.
We do.
Those first two goals were very basic defensive errors. You can't leave Paslak for the second goal, who was 3 foot 2 inches tall, to go and defend like that.
That's
and
true.
The first one was another, you know, massive car crash off the corner.
It's a counter-attack on the corner, so...
Yeah, I know, and that's why you study defensive positionings and you move and stuff and you pick up the counter-attack.
The only thing I would say on that, though, is so early in the game, don't just play more safe. I know it's a corner for Dortmund. They don't need to have so many people in the box on that corner. Maybe play a bit more cautious, safe, not to expose yourself to a potential counter-attack exactly the way it happened.
Okay, wise defensive coach once told me, you could put eight guys in the corner, or no, not eight. You could have seven guys in the box on the corner, but I just need two guys back there to go. And if I learn my defensive movements,
course,
I will at least contest every counterattack. I will at least have a situation where the other team have to do something special to beat me to create the shot on goal. And I thought it was extremely disappointing that Dortmund didn't do that. They weren't able to do that. Do you understand why?
Yeah, you're right.
I want to chuck something else in there. Erling Haaland comes off, right? At 2-2 with a chance for them to get back into the game. Now, I'm assuming this is some kind of load management, squad management. We saw Bellingham and Gio Reyna starting on the bench. But Erling Haaland can't be happy about this. I'm wondering if this is... I'm sorry, I'm trying to find more sticks to beat Lucien Favre.
No, I know. I thought
at some point, this is going to be an issue because this is a trophy. You could have made a statement. You could have bloodied Bayern's nose a little bit. And then you kind of don't, in the name of what, some rotation, give everybody a chance, figure things out. I didn't get that.
Yeah, you're right. And there's also, I thought of you when I watched the game because I thought, okay, I know we will have this debate. But for me, this is a game that could almost define your season in the sense that psychologically, you know that you're in failure to Bayern Munich. You've lost so many times in often the same pattern. This was Favre's occasion to like put the record straight. Say, okay, we're here to compete with you. And for me, he should have put his strongest team. I wanted to see Witzel from the start. I certainly wouldn't want to see Haaland coming off before the end. And I think that was a big missed opportunity. But then it's not Favre's fault if Delaney doesn't look up before receiving the ball to see where Kimmich is and loses the ball where he does.
Okay.
And by the way, for all the people listening, Kimmich press on that third goal is fantastic.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this. I know you love your techers. Just to end this. First of all, Joshua Kimmich, I mean, the guts that this guy has, the intestinal fortitude. You know, I think at some point we'll be having the debate who is more badass, Joshua Kimmich or Philipp Lahm, you know, in terms of... But the way he went and threw himself in there. However, there's also a pretty large element of luck. Or are you going to tell me that Kimmich lying prone on the ground knows exactly where it is?
No, of course not. The finish is lucky. But I just love the way he got that ball back. Yeah. And again, it's for
it's
everybody
God rewarding
to see.
You for your hard work.
Yeah, and if there's one advice, please look around you before you receive the ball. I know it's not easy, but if Delaney had done that, they would not have lost that ball and they would not have conceded that goal.
I'm not going to have a go at Delaney.
No,
because
we love
obviously
it.
We had him on the show when his hair was long and unkempt and everything.
He would be
we had
disappointed himself
I think
again.
You have to look at his face and know stuff happens, right? Yeah. Let's delve a tiny bit deeper, especially on the Bayern side of things, because you know we said attacking right back, midfielder, attacking midfielder, winger, whatever. But I kind of feel like the most serious position is midfield.
Yeah,
you agree, right? Yeah, even if Javi Martinez stays,
Cuisance is going to Leeds. I'm not saying that Cuisance was, but he's just another body there that you could have used. You bring something a bit different.
And he's left-footed. He's more attacking than Javi Martinez.
Exactly. So I'm just a bit worried because if there's an injury somewhere, and we know there will be loads of injuries this season because of the scheduling, because of the lack of preseason, and all of that, because of the way they play with that intensity as well, because they're short in numbers, I think it's a bit worrying.
I think perhaps they're thinking that they can maybe move Alaba into midfield if need be, right?
Yeah,
so you got Lucas coming in. But again, you're still playing whack-a-mole because if Davies gets hurt, then you got to then put Lucas at left back, right?
Yeah.
Although Chris Richards, we've seen a bit of him.
Yeah, we've seen a bit of him.
You know, got a few minutes again last night.
Yeah, interesting.
Maybe they feel like he could be the extra center back. So that, you know, Lucas will be obviously the first option, I would presume, off the bench. But then if you need be, you move him to left back. And, you know, you are kind of playing whack-a-mole.
Do you see what I mean? They shouldn't be in a position of, we can do this. And, that's another option there. They shouldn't be in that position.
Yeah. And you still have the problem at right back. Because, again, if you put Kimmich back there, it's great. But then you've got a Tolisso Martinez midfield and... when Goretzka's out.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
And Goretzka's injury looks like it's going to be a couple of weeks, which hurts.
It does. For Dortmund, do you think the Jadon Sancho is that close, right? He's going to stay? Or if there was one last-ditch offer from United, quite high, they could be tempted. But we saw how much they were missing him yesterday, for example, on Wednesday night.
So I spoke to an intermediary, I know, and it's got nothing to do with this. And they reminded me of a basic truth of football, right? He's like, well, if Sancho moves for 120 million or more than 120 million even between now and Monday, United will look stupid and Borussia Dortmund will look stupid.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh yeah, so that's why it's not going to happen. He's like, yeah, they'll look stupid, but Borussia Dortmund will have 120 million and United will have Sancho.
Yeah.
So it is the kind of thing ultimately, if desperation sets in, if you're Borussia Dortmund, given the situation, given the way the world is right now, if I get my 120 million now, I've got enough alternatives. I have enough attacking players. Yeah. I need Sancho in terms of quality, but I don't necessarily need Sancho in terms of bodies, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I can spin it to, look, we have Reyna, Bellingham, whatever, Brandt Royce, you'd be a billion guys.
Yeah,
right?
Of course, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not like, and I say this as like on a speculative level rather than a reporting level because I'm not reporting this, but there is. I think if they show up with the money, despite what Borussia Dortmund said, they're really like, okay, here, take him away, and he wants to go.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, I think that's enough German stuff for the first segment of the show. Let's talk about Manchester United, the theater of dreams. We're joined by Mark Ogden. Jules, the transfer window closes on Monday night at 11 o'clock British Standard Time. And a lot of United fans are angry. They're wondering. I'm going to ask Mark now whether I am absolutely deluded, Mark, in thinking that the club have something up their sleeve, maybe beyond Alex Telles, even assuming that that happens.
I would never say you were deluded, Gal, but I think you might be optimistic to suggest that there is something up United's sleeve. I mean, we've all seen now over the last, is it nearly 7-8 years that Ed Woodward's been in charge, they do sign a lot of players late in transfer windows, more by accident than by design. I think it's a case of they get to the last week of the window, panic sets in, they look at the list of players that might be available and end up signing one or two. So that is more likely to happen. In terms of rabbit up their sleeve, I don't think it's going to be something that's been a big plan all along. I'd be very surprised if Sancho suddenly turns up on Monday. I think, you know, when you get to this stage of the window, it really is a case of seeing what's left. It's like, you know, going to the supermarket at midnight, isn't it, and seeing what's left on the shelf. This is where United are right now.
But this is a difficult thing for me because there is a lot left out there. There is a ton left. There's a lot of very good players,
but there is
and
no
clubs
planning.
Have to shed them.
Surely you know there's no planning at that club.
Well,
you know.
That's what I want to ask Mark about, because when I look at perhaps what to me is possibly the biggest need, I wrote about this on Monday, is I look in central defense, right? Let's leave Harry Maguire to one side and his court case and whatever, right? Obviously, you have Lindelof, who I think is not good. And by the way, we're talking after United win in the League Cup. Let's acknowledge that. Then you go beyond that. You got Eric Bailly and his injury record. You have Twan Zibi, who I think has played like a handful of games in the last couple of years and is still quite young. I think he's had one full season when he was on loan at Aston Villa. You have Fosu Mensah, who I think has played even less.
Yeah.
And you have Phil Jones. And is there somebody I'm forgetting, Mark? Oh, sorry.
Chris Smalling, Marcus Rojo.
Eric Bailly, Marcus Rojo, Chris Smalling.
Isn't Marcus Rojo gone? I already mentioned Eric Bailly.
No,
crappy. And then we have Chris Smalling. He doesn't like. He doesn't seem to like. He doesn't seem to want to keep him around. Maybe Smalling wants to go, and they're talking to Roma. Why? Well, is this really the plan to go into the season? Is he going to turn Luke Shaw and Aaron Wan-Bissaka into center backs? What's he going to do? When you speak to them and they say, "Yeah, we have a plan," what is the plan at center back? It's been reported they're not going to sign a center back. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Well,
but why?
I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in public anyway, he's very much the club man. He says the right things, very diplomatic. But, you know, I know for a fact that they were looking at Upamecano back in July. They could have got him for a lot less than he's now available on his current escape clause. So, you know, they've missed out there. Solskjaer wanted a centre-half. Solskjaer expected deals to be done early in the window.
If I jump in, I just want to be very clear on this. You say Solskjaer wants... Yeah. You said wanted, as in like past tense. I'm assuming if he wanted a guy in July, he still wants a centre back now. Can we establish this?
100%, yeah.
So Solskjaer wants a central defender.
Yeah, he wants a centre half. He wants a right sided player.
Okay, but let's just stick to the centre back thing, because this is what really, really, really gets my goat right now. He wants a centre half. There's about a million veteran centre halves out there. If you want to go for some short term,
what were you talking about? Veteran?
Or younger ones if they have money. Yeah.
Listen, there's two things. Either there's one player that you think will make a big difference and you try to sign him, and if you can't sign him, you wait a little bit. That's the Van Dijk story.
Fine.
Or you've got a plan, a proper plan, where you've got three names on your list, for example. You go to the first one, Koulibaly from Man City, you can't sign him. You go to the second one, Koundé, you can't sign him. Then you sign your third one. That's what most big clubs do. They've got a proper plan in place with targets. Target one can't happen for different reasons. It's okay, don't worry. Target two, same. Then you go to target three, who's still a very good player. Or it's your target one and nothing else, and you wait a little bit more. And I really hope for United, if they don't sign anyone else by now, between now and Monday, that is because they just want their target number one in all those positions, and they will come in January.
But Mark, I don't know if they have till January, and I want to go back to Smalling for a second. Is the idea that Smalling will be his new signing if they end up not selling him, or their heart set on trying to sell him if they can get the price they want, and that would imply that they're going to go and get somebody else who maybe a name we haven't heard yet in the last 3-4 days, right?
No, I mean, Smalling won't. I'd be very surprised if Smalling is there next Tuesday morning. I think the situation with Smalling is he had a great season at Roma, and having him back would be an embarrassment for Solskjaer, because the manager has made a decision a year ago that he can go out on loan. Very few managers, good or bad, suddenly admit in public, well, I've made a mistake, that I'll bring him back. It was too good to loan out, I'll bring him back. He probably is the second best centre-half on the books. Some would argue he's better than Maguire, but it doesn't make sense to leave him out in the cold when Lindelof is clearly not good enough. And, you know, Roma at the moment aren't paying the money. For me, it seems obvious that you put Smalling back in, but Solskjaer made a decision a year ago that he didn't rate him. So to suddenly come back a year on and start saying, well, I was wrong there.
Such a mess. I mean, same for left back. They wanted Reguilón. You miss out on Reguilón, the back close, all of that. Then you set your eyes on Alex Telles. And it's still not happening. I mean, what's going on? I don't understand.
Okay, A, I'd like to ask you about it. A, what's going on with that? And B, I appreciate you can upgrade left back, but if you have Shaw and Brandon Williams, shouldn't other positions be more of a priority?
I think if you had two outstanding left backs, then other positions would be a priority. But let's be honest, Luke Shaw and Brandon Williams, that probably wouldn't be the second choice left back at most top five clubs, never mind the first choice. I think United have to strengthen that.
Alex Telles is a better left back than...
I mean, he's 27.
He's still a better player.
Right. Absolutely, but you could make a case for strengthening 8 or 9 positions in that team quite easily. Left back for me, I suppose it's the least worst option right now. It doesn't make sense. I think there are bigger areas to strengthen right now.
I am utterly flabbergasted by all this. I just don't understand. I'm going to keep giving the benefit of the doubt until Monday night at 11 o'clock. Okay, if you're watching our television show, you're not hearing this. And if you're listening to our podcast, you are. And podcast listeners, I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. We don't always tape the podcast in sequence. And today, for a number of technical issues, Jules has kind of had to come and go. So it's just going to be me and Mark for this little podcast extra on Manchester United as we delve a little deeper. And then you'll hear Jules again later for quick hits. So don't be alarmed. It's all normal. It's just that we're not going to treat you like children, like some freaking Wizard of Oz, don't look behind the curtain. This is real life, and we're taping things in segment. So, Augie, it's just me and you. It's intimate. It's even better, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's we're so far apart, but we're so close.
All right. Let's go back to Smalling again, just because I want to beat this dead horse to death. Now, indications are that Roma have stepped up their offer for Smalling. Maybe Smalling has made it even clearer that he wants to leave. I just want to go back and reconfirm what you said earlier. If Smalling goes, he's not going to be replaced. Is that accurate? That's certainly what United are briefing, what they're putting out there, right?
No, if Smalling goes, they are still in the market for a centre-half, but...
They are.
It won't be.
In the last 5 days.
Absolutely.
Because what I've read and what we've reported is that they're in the market for a left-back, a right-winger, and potentially a backup striker. Mm. But now they're back in the market for a centre-half as well.
They've always been in the market for centre-half. Dayot Upamecano was Solskjaer's favourite target, but that...
You said that before, but I'm saying is that... But like, I mean, Upamecano's a different profile, right? So...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that ship has sailed, so the left... It feels a bit like supermarket sweep in the final days of the window where...
Do you think, if you had to guess, nobody's going to hold you to this, Do you think if Smalling leaves, he feels like he needs to bring in even a short-term replacement to have an extra body in there? Or is he really going to go ahead with, you know, a backup crew that contains the gentleman that I mentioned before, Bai, Twanzebe, Fosu Mensah, Rojo, and Phil freaking Jones?
Solskjaer will want to bring somebody in. Whether he does is a different matter. And, you know, they can't keep making short-term moves. They made a short-term move in January to sign Ighalo when they needed a striker. They can't.
And they finished top four as a result, so that obviously worked.
Yeah, but you can't keep making short-term measures. You know, you're Man United, this has been the longest summer window ever. It's been about 6 months longer. They still get the final 5 days.
Enough of your negativity. Get United fans excited. What about this kid? I've seen the name Mengi. He's 18 years old. Is he any good?
Yeah, Mengi's come to the ranks. He's got real pace. They really think he's got a chance. But let's be honest, they had the same idea with Twanzebe, who's also a kid that's come to the ranks. And you can't keep basing your prospects on young players coming through the ranks. No matter how good they are, you need some experience in there as well, some quality experience. And United have been doing this for too long now, promoting the youth, just to save money, to saving money all over the place. And they desperately need a commanding centre-half, a quality striker, and probably a midfielder as well. You know, we keep hearing that N'Golo Kante is unsettled at Chelsea and Chelsea might let him go. It'd be perfect for Man United.
Okay, but that's not going to happen.
Exactly, because United doesn't seem to have the imagination to do it.
And why do they need a midfielder when they have Fred and Matic and McTominay?
Because none of them are good enough. Matic has got great experience, but he's too slow to get over the pitch right now. McTominay has got promise, but he lacks the experience and the calm headedness of Matic. If you could mold those two together...
Yeah, but how's he going to get it if he doesn't play?
And Fred, Fred for me is just a squad player in a good team. I don't think Fred's a starter. I think United should be looking for the best around. And McTominay, I think he's got promise, but again, they haven't got the right blend. Then they need somebody that's at the peak of their powers now.
I mean, I say this because this really terrifies me. You're going into a season which is incredible. I mean, it's not to terrify me. I don't care. I'm not a United fan, but if I were, it would terrify me because you're going into a season with a very congested calendar. With a Premier League deciding that you're only going to have three substitutes, and after Harry Maguire and Lindelof, your options are all people who either aren't good or have been injured for long, long stretches. There's just so many question marks. I want to throw this out there. Could he be plotting maybe moving McTominay to centre back?
No, it's not something that I've been made aware of. I don't think...
He's played there before a couple of times, right?
But if you move McTominay to centre-half, you're weakening your midfield options. It's like when United to play Darren Fletcher and Michael Carrick at centre-half where they were struggling for players. It's Man United. It's not what Man United should be doing. You know, they should
be... It's what Bayern are doing. But it's what Bayern are doing, moving things around, and they won the treble. But yeah, you're right.
Bayern have got proper players. Yeah, Bayern have got a squad of great players that they can accommodate. They can afford to do that. Man United don't. And I think the concern for Man United fans is that this is becoming a common theme every year in the transfer market, January and in the summer, where they don't seem to have a plan. They don't seem to be ahead of the game, ahead of the curve. It's always last minute. And I fully expect maybe two players to come in before the transfer deadline day. But they've left it so late now, it looks like bad planning. It looks like panic buying because surely they can't be signing the top targets now in the last few days of the window. If that's the case, they've had a terrible window because if the top targets are out there, they should have signed them ages ago and they should have been Man United. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said 2-3 months ago that this was a chance for United to exploit the window and exploit the situation. They're a big, wealthy club. Yes, they're making losses like everybody else is, but Solskjaer expected United to make moves this summer, and they haven't. They signed Donny van de Beek from Ajax. And with all due respect to Ajax, Ajax are a club that will always sell players because that's their model. United should be signing more players than Donny van de Beek.
Midfield, Andy Pereira has gone to Lazio on loan. You going to miss him?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think Andres Pereira has been 2 years past his sell-by date at Man United, and there are several others like that as well.
All right, what about the striker situation? Because, again, I said this at the start of last year, Ighalo's leaving in January. I mean, I suppose they could extend his loan, maybe. Who knows what the world's going to look like then. But do you think it's important for them to have another option up front?
Well, listen, they've prioritised a right-sided attacking player all summer with Sancho, and they haven't got him yet. So if they don't get Sancho and they lose Ighalo in January, because there's no way they'll extend Ighalo again, then they're already worse off than they were at the start of the season. So if they've made a priority of getting they've got a list of players on the right side they want. They looked at Bale, and he knew he was a second choice to Sancho. They looked at Kingsley Coman, Douglas Costa, Ivan Perisic. They're in the market for a right-sided attacking player, and I think they'll get one.
All these people that you mentioned, these are all, except for Sancho, these are all players that the clubs are trying to get rid of. So when we hear that they looked at these guys, these are all players where no doubt agents said, oh, look, and Coleman too, I guess, but Coleman, you know, is that Bayern's going to be expensive. These all look like agents trying to make deals and offering them to United. I mean, I refuse to believe United seriously looked at Gareth Bale, for example, because that would make zero sense.
Gareth Bale was on the list, but it was made clear to Bale that Sancho is our priority. If we can't get Sancho, you will be high on our list. And I was told that Bale was attracted by the prospects of playing for Man United. He actually fancied the move, but because he had an offer from Tottenham on the table, he felt that I don't want to risk losing the Tottenham move by waiting 2 weeks for a deal that might never happen with Man United. But yes, he was a player that United looked at. That's been confirmed from both ends to me that Bale was on their list.
I've got to say, with Bale, he's surrounded by so many Pinocchios that I've got no idea what to think. But Perisic is somebody who they can get, they wanted before, who is available. That might take a box, at least give you another body, another option. At center forward, also, there's Cavani still floating out there. Is that anything that they might consider? Would they view that as,
Cavani has been put to United by agents. I mean, you wouldn't have to have the best scouting network in the world to realise that Edinson Cavani is available right now because he left PSG in the summer on a free. So, you know, again, it would be a short-term measure, but I think Cavani's got at least a year in him in the Premier League. He'd be a much better option than Ighalo. I think Cavani would be a win-win for Man United. But again, it just feels a bit short-term.
But can I say something about United being short-term, right? Is if you're saying we have long-term targets that we want to spend on and we don't want to be fleeced on them, and if you say that you can wait a year to get Sancho, that's fine. In the meantime, there is a here and now. Like, we can call it short-term, but the present is important. Live today, for tomorrow may never come, Manchester United. And I'll tell you what, you might not finish top four if you don't address some of the short-term needs. That's what really bugs me about this attitude.
I think people at United, certainly the scouting department and probably upstairs with right to Ed Woodward, have been stung by the consequences of Alexis Sanchez, Angel Di Maria, Falcao, the big names they brought in. You know, the instant successes they thought, and they cost them a lot of money. They didn't really work out, and I think they've now reverted the other way, too far the other way, and they're deciding to go for long-term buys. But I think you're right, they need to start looking short-term as well. And I think the Cavani thing, if 2 years ago, I think United would have been at the front of the queue for Cavani because it ticked their boxes. But because of what happened with Sanchez and the others...
They gave Sanchez a long-term deal. I mean, what bugs me about Cavani is, and unfortunately we in the media are guilty of this because we talk to somebody and then we parrot whatever they say. They're like, oh, but Cavani's wages are too high. Cavani's wages, let me remind everybody, Cavani's wages are zero right now, okay? Cavani makes nothing, okay? So you can go and you can negotiate with him. Was he making a ton of money before? Yes, absolutely. It doesn't mean you have to go and give him that same money now. So if you think he's the right guy, and you can give him a year plus an option if he plays certain minutes or whatever, you can do things to protect yourself for this one season while you go and you pursue your longer-term targets. I think that is the really difficult thing for me to understand. Like I said, though, I'm giving Ed and United the benefit of the doubt until 11 o'clock British Standard Time. They got something up their sleeve, right?
They've got options up their sleeve, but I don't think it's very exciting options.
So negative. All right, we got to leave it there, Augie.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough negativity, enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, the French FA's disciplinary committee has dropped the case against Alvaro, who was accused of racially abusing Neymar, and Neymar himself, who was accused of making racist comments to Sakai. Does it mean nothing happened, or does it simply mean there's no evidence of anything?
They're saying they could not find strong enough evidences to suspend and ban.
And they don't do that whole balance of probabilities thing that they like to do.
Not really. They did the lip reading thing, like everybody else, but they say it's 30% accurate, so we can't really base everything on that. And I think also,
as my friend Marco Materazzi will remind you, French people aren't great when it comes to lip reading. Your history there isn't great.
And also, I think that for the league and the discipline committee, I think it was the outcome that was the easiest, if you see what I mean. You know, you don't ban your star player as Neymar of the league. There's no issue between the two clubs with the big rivalry.
You don't attract negative publicity.
But I've got an issue with that, though, because I don't want what's the easiest outcome. I want what's the right outcome. And I'm not really sure that's the right outcome. But this is going on. Everybody wants to move on. Let's move on. Real Madrid beat Valladolid 1-0. And my boy Zizou turns up with a diamond midfield in that 4-4-2. That's progress, right? Is there progress?
Well, you know, he tried the Jovic Benzema partnership again. Jovic had a chance on the counter, which screwed up. I thought he did better, but he couldn't have done much worse than last week. Valladolid played really, really well, but I thought Real Madrid were disappointing. I don't think the diamond is the way forward. And in fact, things got better when Vinicius came on, and
obviously
he ended up scoring the goal. So look, this is a team that if you want to keep trying this, and it's nice, Asensio and Isco are back, they're getting fitter. Long term, this has got to be a team.
But when your best player is Courtois again, there's a problem.
Yeah, it's a second man of the match of the season. Hmm. Spurs knocked Chelsea out of the League Cup on penalties. But Jules, they played Sunday, Tuesday, and again they play on Thursday night against Maccabi Haifa in the Europa League. This is silly, right? Almost as silly as Eric Dier taking a bathroom break during the game and Mourinho making a point to chase him into the toilet. Mourinho knows the Amazon cameras are no longer following him, right?
I think he knew there was cameras in the tunnel and that people would see him going and put pressure on Eric Dier to hurry up.
Because if Eric Dier doesn't know, he needs to hurry up back onto the...
I don't even want to talk about this. However, you're right on the scheduling. It's absolutely crazy. I think it's outrageous to have them playing Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday for, what, 2 or 3 weeks in a row? I mean, come on. Let's think about the players. Let's think about you know, the health of the players.
And three substitutions. Crazy. Thank you. Freak show is the word.
Inter destroyed Benevento 5-2 as Conte makes a bunch of changes. Gab, is there reason to be excited? I mean, Hakimi looked so fantastic. And I guess, really, they don't really need Diego Godin and Raja Nainggolan, right?
Yeah, that's why Godin has left and Nainggolan is on his way. It's important for them to shed wages and salaries. They look really, really impressive. As you said, not just Hakimi, but the flip side of that, and Conte made a lot of changes. Flip side of that, of course, is that it was newly promoted Benevento and Pippo Inzaghi. And, you know, They're the magic witches and everything.
It was too easy. I like Alexis, where he played a bit more deep. And you know, I thought it was a bad night for the Inzaghi family, though.
Oh, yeah.
Both between Simone and Pippo. Let's move on.
Luis Suarez makes his second appearance for Atletico Madrid against Huesca. Fair to say it didn't go as well as his first.
They always get us, don't we? We see one good game. Come on. They're evolving. They're changing.
It's like showtime.
Nil-nil,
boy draw.
Boring. He played an hour. He was rubbish. They were rubbish. I just don't know.
Come on. Believe in Chong.
Leo Messi says he takes responsibility for errors, Gab, that he may have made this summer and calls for unity amongst the fans, the club. Is that a bit too late, though?
Look, what's he supposed to say, right? I think he did what he felt was right in the summer. I think a lot of people felt that it was right. I called it a power play. Other people didn't like it a power play. Yeah. I would rather have Messi in charge and calling the shots than Bartomeu, personally. So, look, let's move on. The season's there. They're all stuck with each other. Let's go and make the best of it. Spurs were linked to Arek Milik to be Harry Kane's backup, but recent reports suggest it could be Benfica's Carlos Vinicius.
Wow.
Now, Jules, he was at Napoli too,
and never played. And then he went on to, you see the pattern of these teams. Rio Ave, yes, Monaco, yeah, Benfica, cool. And now possibly Spurs. Do you see a pattern? Is there a common thread between these three teams and the Spurs?
Someone heavily involved in all those clubs, maybe, that would facilitate things?
Yeah, for those who don't get it, this is all a Jorge Mendes
thing. Player at Jorge Mendes clubs. Listen, he was in Monaco, he was young. He's physical, he's tall.
He wasn't that young in Monaco. He's 25 now. I thought he was really young.
Yeah, he's 23, okay.
Okay, oh, he's a baby.
I know, but he's still young, youngish, you know. And he did some couple of good things, scored 2 goals in 16 games, but 3 starts. There was something there, but...
I don't know. Just getting a body in.
Maybe as a sub, you know, and replacement for Kane, but I don't think you should expect too much. Although he had a very good season with Benfica last year. 11 Genoa players and 4 members of staff tested positive for COVID-19, Gab. They're still going to play this weekend, though. Is that right? And by the way, Napoli, who they faced last weekend, all tested negative, which I guess
thankfully shows the protocol in stadium works. Yes, they are playing this weekend. Obviously, most of these cases are asymptomatic. Yeah. They're applying, I think, a similar standard to what they're applying in the Premier League, I think, with UEFA as well, that, you know, I think it's 13 or 14 players. One of them has to be a goalkeeper. They have their third goalkeeper there. He was about to leave, but he's sticking around. This is the new normal. We're going to have to deal with this during the season. And I think there is a debate to be had later on, is if teams have to go and play in these conditions with everybody in quarantine, what does it say for the integrity of the season? And should it come with a big asterisk at the end?
In France, that would have been postponed. That game would have been postponed.
I don't know for how long they can keep postponing games in France.
I hear you.
Speaking of positive tests, Thiago Alcantara is also testing positive to COVID for Liverpool. Jules, I guess this is, again, we said, the new normal.
Yeah, it is. He missed a game against Arsenal on Monday in the league. He will miss the one in the Carabao Cup and the one at the weekend against Aston Villa as well. This is what happens.
And then it's international break.
So he will come back after that. It's a shame because he played so well against Chelsea and was adapted and integrating so well. It's just the way it is. I think everybody will have to get used to it. Ruben Dias shed tears as you said goodbye to Benfica, but his manager there, Jorge Jesus, said that he was leaving a bigger club than City, apart from the financial power. Do you agree?
Look, first of all, this whole, ooh, our club's bigger, this club's bigger, it's an absolute stupid conversation. But yeah, if you want to talk about historically, Benfica have won 2 European Cups, City have not. Benfica, they have this membership scheme. I think it's the second biggest or biggest in the world, it's like 100,000 people. Yeah, Benfica is an important historical club, and City pay more money. So, you know, that's why he's going to and play in a better league. And that's why he's going. You know,
it's simple. Right now, he's got more chances to win the Champions League at City than at Benfica.
Chelsea are hard at work to shed salary and excess players. Timoui Bakayoko is linked to Paris Saint-Germain. Good option all around. I mean, this would be a loan deal, right?
Yeah, I think that would be a loan deal, maybe with a fee, loan with a fee. You know, he's from Paris. He's Paris born and bred proper. He wants to play there. I think it would be a good idea. It's just that... will they have enough time to make it happen? That's the thing.
Oh, I think Chelsea would put him on the Eurostar and gift wrap him.
Staying in West London, Gab, Chelsea have also sent Ross Barkley to Aston Villa. I guess Lampard doesn't need him?
I guess he feels he doesn't need him. I mean, look, this is the situation that you're in. They have a lot of bodies in there. I think it also reveals that, I'm not saying that we have to compare Barkley and Loftus-Cheek because they're both tall English central midfielders, but I think at some point, I think that does come into it, right? You can't, you got to put your eggs in one basket or the other. I don't think Barkley was going to play as much if Loftus-Cheek was fit. We saw Loftus-Cheek at the start of the season, so that's the way he's going. What I would worry more about Chelsea is defensive midfield and what are the options there. There's still reports that Jorginho could leave.
Yeah.
I think ultimately he's going to stay because other than Conte, there's no defensive midfielder.
It is crazy.
And I think this whole Chelsea scheme, I think they would have liked to have sold one or two of these guys, frankly. But hey, if you can't sell, go ahead and loan.
And good signing for Villa as well.
Jules, it's quite a coup for my boys at Olympique Lyonnais. They picked up Lucas Paqueta from Milan. And it's good news for Arsenal fans too, right? I'll tell you what, it's really good news for Milan.
It's good news for Milan because they recoup a bit of the money they spend on him.
Through the magic of amortization, they net out. And he's gone.
It didn't work out for him there. Let's hope he works out for Lyon. He's seen as the replacement for Usamawa, who you would think then could be on his way.
Very different players.
Different players.
Does Leonardo now secretly work for Lyon too? And just what?
No, but Juninho does. You know, that's the Brazilian connection So it'd be interesting. I'm really looking forward to see how he does in France.
Awar, tell me about Awar.
Awar's
on his way.
Yeah, wait,
to North London.
Talks continuing between Arsenal and, and Lyon. I think, as I said, I think it will happen. I think he's the perfect player that they need and that Arteta really wants, but he's still not there just yet.
All right.
More of the same for Atalanta. They've scored 8 goals, Gabi, in their first 2 Serie A games, both away from home as well. And on Wednesday, they beat up Lazio 4-1. Really impressive. Are they contenders?
Oh, they are title contenders. There's no question they're title contenders, and they're deeper this year. To get out of the gate this quickly, and remember, Atalanta's season went on late, right? They're not one of those teams, you know, they were in the Champions League later.
Yeah. And,
it's just so impressive the way they did it. Lazio, I thought, really disappointing. This is pretty much very close to full strength Lazio. Lazio didn't even play that badly, I thought. Mm. But when you run into Atalanta playing this way, Papu Gomez being Papu, doing the Papu dance. Come on, man.
Amazing.
That's special. Right, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you for joining us on the Gab and Jules show. It's a privilege to have you with us. Have a great weekend. And Jules, how about we come back Monday?
See you on Monday.
We all we got. We all we need.